recorded live from around British Columbia, Canada. This is Ramsey Theory. No strangers at this party. In this program, students of Ramsey Theory investigate the deepest questions in the field and dig into the lives of the most notable modern theorists. The podcast is hosted by Simon Fraser University, which is located on the unceded traditional territories of the Tsleil-Waututh, Coquitlam, Squamish, and Musqueam nations. This podcast was made possible by the students of Simon Fraser University's Ramsey Theory course, led by Dr. Veselin Yungich, who is also the producer of this series, as well as funding from the Mathcatcher Outreach Program. Stay tuned, because this is Ramsey Theory, no strangers at this party.
Hello everyone, and welcome to Ramsey Theory, no strangers at this party. My name is Stephen Ng, and I'm a student at Simon Fraser University, currently planning to enter a teaching program to become a high school teacher. What fascinates me about math is how there is so much of it, but a lot of people do not realize that it's there until they put certain pieces together. Then patterns in mathematics arise, which is also why I got involved with this project, because it allowed me to speak with mathematicians across the world who have put those pieces together.
Hi, I'm Payal. I'm a fourth-year computing science student at Simon Fraser University, British Columbia. I'm interested in mathematics because I think, along with computing, it makes me better at problem solving.
My name is Newt Hardin. I'm a third-year student at SFU. I'm getting a minor in math, and I'm in a chem degree right now. I am hoping to switch into the education program, as I would like to teach kindergarten someday. I'm getting a math minor because I find patterns in problem solving and math very interesting and very intriguing to learn about.
Hello there, my name is Harleen Kaur and I'm a second year student at Simon Fraser University. My major is computer science, but since I was a kid, I always had interest in mathematics, which made me pursue a minor in math, and that is how I took this course. Also, talking to mathematicians from all over the world for this project made me realize how important Ramsey theory is and how much of an impact it makes in this world.
We hope to learn more about mathematics, Ramsey theory, and of course, notable Ramsey theorists through this podcast. So we have another special guest today, Dr. Thomas Kaiser. Dr. Kaiser is a professor at the Department of Mathematics at the Faculty of Applied Sciences at the University of West Bohemia in Pilsen, Czech Republic. Dr. Kaiser has made many contributions to combinatorics and discrete mathematics, especially graph theory, and teaches courses on discrete mathematics, linear algebra, codes, logic, and set theory. Dr. Kaiser has published over 70 papers in his academic career, with many of those papers speaking about Hamiltonian cycles. That is, a graph cycle that visits each node of a graph exactly once. Welcome, Dr. Thomas Kaiser.
How are you doing today?
Fine, thank you.
Would you like sharing a little bit about yourself growing up?
So I guess I actually liked math from an early age. I like numbers, even before I started to attend school. And I don't know if that's related to the fact that I have a sister who's 6 years older than me, and so I think she taught me quite a lot before I actually went to school. So she liked playing the teacher, but so I think she taught me quite a few things. And I don't know if that was the main factor, but I did like math, and I remember that I liked like these division problems, so dividing to large numbers and so on. That was something. So like, and there were actually other kids in the class who liked this sort of. There was a little contest each time, like who would be the first to calculate that. So I did I did like maths already then, and actually the second half of my primary school, which was from like grade 5 to 8, I attended a primary school specialized in mathematics. So that was we had a great teacher there, a very dedicated lady, and I think that was another reason why I liked math quite a lot by the time I entered the secondary school.
So that's what interested you in math and wanted to pursue a career in it?
Not at that time yet, because it was like I was 13, so I didn't really think about a career in mathematics. But and moreover, I became quite interested in computers at that time, computers and programming. I got a personal computer. It was a home computer at that time. It was called Spectrum, but I don't think that can ring a bell with you. Well, probably not, but it was made in the UK, and actually the owner of the founder of that company who manufactured those computers died recently. It was my hobby at the time, computers, and so I think I would perhaps rather think about a career in programming then, or rather I didn't think about this much yet. I then attended this high school that was also specialized in mathematics. It was in Prague. Previously to that, we lived in a town in the northern part of Czech Republic named Teplice. So I moved. Well, the high school I attended was in Prague. So I stayed there. I only went home for the weekends, and it was a very good school. But somehow I found that I'm becoming more interested in computers and less in mathematics. I guess it wasn't like completely satisfying. Perhaps it was the way that mathematics was taught, something about it. But I was somehow less attracted to maths than I was to the computers. So I decided to actually study computing, to study something like a more practically oriented. After some thinking, I decided to study this at Charles University rather than some other more practically oriented college, maybe. I guess, you know, that way one could study computers and still stay close to the theoretical side of it, perhaps. Yeah, that was what I thought. But so I studied computer science. I started to study computer science at Charles University in Prague. But then a strange thing happened, because so there was a part of the first year curriculum was where math classes, analysis and set theory and such. So especially these lectures on set theory, I found them so fascinating that I basically from the start, I was a lot more attracted to the math again than to the computer. So then I was like year after year, I was shifting closer to mathematics from the computing, although I did like the classes on theoretical computer science as well, but my thesis topic was in maths, and then when I went to study for the PhD, so that was already a time when I started thinking about a career in maths. Yes, and I think it was very much because of these classes, especially the lectures in set theory. That was something that I was completely fascinated by that. It was mathematics, but it was very philosophical at the same time. And maybe this mixture was something I needed at the time. Plus, there was the informal style that mm-hmm. was a new thing to me after the more like rigorous style at the high school, right? So you will know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
It was very inspiring and like opened up a new world to me. Yeah. So I started to do more math or like be more mathematics oriented again.
Wow. So how were you introduced to the graph theory and like Ramsey theory? Like, has it affected the way you think?
Well, that's a very interesting question, because either it was, I was introduced to it, an early time was some course on, discrete mathematics, say, that I attended. Later, there were more courses like this, and I also started to attend a seminar, like a combinatorics seminar for students at the Department of Applied Mathematics. This whole thing was, and the study was at the, it's called the Faculty of Maths and Physics, Charles University, and the department where the graph theory is concentrated there is the Department of Applied Mathematics, and I somehow started to attend more and more like the seminar there, and most of the classes were there actually. So that's where I learned about graph theory, and I immediately, I may have heard about it before, but this was like the real, like the serious introduction to the subject. And so I liked the way of somehow I liked the attitude of discrete mathematics or discrete mathematicians to the subject. But I don't know if that's because I was influenced by the subject, or maybe or if it's the other way around, that I inclined to the subject because that's the way I think as well. So somehow, but there is some kind of affinity. I just can't say like what is like distinguish the cause from the consequence. What is distinctive about the way that people think in graph theory or discrete mathematics or combinatorics? I actually thought about it a bit, and one thing that's maybe somewhat special about it is that people in combinatorics kind of take pride in taking a down-to-earth approach, right? So if there is a proof or something, there is an argument based on some sophisticated deep mathematical theories using arguments from complex analysis and stuff like that, then quite often the person from combinatorics will tell you, oh, that's nice, but could we do without that method? Could we just find a completely simple explanation, right? And so that's something I liked, kind of like reductionism, maybe you could say. So that's something I liked. It's not always a good thing, right? Because it's trying to eliminate some beautiful argument is maybe not the thing you should do. But anyway, I like the stress on like finding the, or like presenting the material, presenting the proofs in as simpler way as possible. That's something I still like about that. So so that is one thing, and the stress on like clarity. Things should be mm-hmm. so it's not the explanation should not be more difficult than necessary. So some things are complicated, right? So it's not, you can't explain them in 2 minutes, but uh, But you should always try to make it as simple as possible. And a good thing about graph theory, I guess, is it's also like even the language is simple, right? And graphs are simple. So it's easy to describe a research question. And people can actually start working on it in 5 minutes because you don't have to study thick books about the concepts or the terminology. You can just start. You can just start thinking about that. On the other hand, it is a bit deceptive because it looks simple, but maybe it's actually quite complicated. You just don't see it on the surface, right?
So yeah. What are your thoughts about the connection between the graph theory and like Ramsey theory? Like, there's a field called Ramsey graph theory. If you would like to explain us more about it,
I have a working knowledge of Ramsey theory and use it sometimes or like occasionally work on a problem from Ramsey theory. But it's not that, you know, I'm a Ramsey theorist or anything. The focus of Ramsey theory is order, even in like large disorderly structures. If it's large, you can always find some sort of order in it, right? So this description is like so terribly vague that it would be almost useless. But by now, I guess you see what I mean. And one of the simplest situations where you can demonstrate what Ramsey theory is about is the graph Ramsey theorem, where you take a large complete graph and you color the edges are colored in two colors. And the theorem says that there is always a large homogeneous subset where all the edges on the subset are colored in one color, right? No matter how complicated your coloring is. So this is this would belong to graph Ramsey theory, right? And it's a prototype of Ramsey theory. And I think also historically, that must have been one of the earliest results. Was that the result of, I think that was the first Ramsey theorem that was proved by Frank Ramsey, I think. But there are many connections to other parts of combinatorics and you have it's related to arithmetic progressions in colorings, like monochromatic arithmetic progressions, many results in so there is arithmetic Ramsey theory and so on. So a nice thing about the theory is that it's related to many different things.
Shifting a little bit away from graph theory now, what are your thoughts about using computers in mathematical research? Have you ever gotten an idea about certain mathematical properties by observing outcomes of some computationally observed results?
Yeah. Actually, quite often. It happened a few times. One thing I would like to say about this is if you do follow a research career in mathematics, especially discrete mathematics, I think it's really very important to have some proficiency with computers, and it can really not only help you a lot, but sometimes it can be the factor that decides whether you manage to resolve the question that you are working on or not, right? So for instance, it happened to me once that with some colleagues we had a week to work on a problem and so we had some thoughts about it. It was a problem in graph coloring and it looked like something that we couldn't prove it, but it looked very plausible. So we spent some time looking for the argument, and we already spent like 3 days of our five days we had for that. We still didn't have the argument, so I decided to like spend another couple of hours by writing a program to search through a catalog of graphs with the right properties to test for this like for this property that we were after. And we were extremely lucky. It couldn't be predicted, but it was worth a try because we were extremely lucky, and the program found exactly one exceptional graph that did not have the property. So that was a counterexample. I don't think we would have had the chance to find it without that, because you know it was. So once we found it in the paper that we later started to write, we had to prove that it actually failed to have the conjectured property, and even proving it was non-trivial work. So I don't think we would have thought of that graph, of that particular graph, if we didn't have the hint from the if the computer didn't find it. When this happens, when you find quite often you find something by computer, and then by analyzing the properties, that can send you in the right direction, and then you are able to generalize that example to a larger class, maybe an infinite class of examples, just by abstracting the properties of that one example, which is exactly what happened in this case. There was an infinite family of examples, just like this one. And the interesting thing is that, as I said, this was a problem in graph coloring, very easy to describe in terms of just a graph coloring problem. But it was inspired by, or actually it was a, I think an equivalent form, perhaps, of a question in commutative algebra, which we were not aware of, you know, so that was not a field that we were working. So we were working in graph theory, and we only got to this problem because of this coloring translation. But it turned out to be the counterexample turned out to be actually also a counterexample to the original question about commutative algebra, which we actually had hard time understanding after. So it happened that we disproved a question whose formulation we wouldn't originally even understand, and it took some effort to understand what really was implied by the example.
So is there any paper that you're most proud of?
Yeah, there is a paper that I am most proud of, and definitely it's the most special paper for me, because it took so long. I was working on this for so long, and it is so long, and it was just so hard to write it, and so on. So and that's a paper from about nine years ago, 2012, I think. And it's a paper about, so it belongs to the field called Hamiltonian graph theory. Most of the results are concerned with long cycles in graphs. So when you have a graph, you can ask, is there a cycle in the graph that visits all the vertices, right? That's called a Hamilton cycle. And there are many results saying that the graph has a Hamilton cycle, or is close to having a Hamilton cycle, or something like that. And there is a long-standing conjecture that in Hamiltonian graph theory, which was posed by several authors in various equivalent forms. I might not be able to state it precisely now, so let me just say it without explaining the words. It says that such Hamilton cycles exist in so-called line graphs under the assumption that the line graph is four connected. Okay, so So it's a question of what a line graph is and what four connected means. But anyway, let's leave that aside for the moment. But this was something that this conjecture comes from the 80s, and it's something that I was aware by the time that I was like starting to do research in graph theory. So let's say around, well, I guess like even during my PhD studies, I was aware of this so this was something that I always found quite fascinating, and this result that I'm talking about is related to that. I was attending a workshop, was around 2000. It must have been around the year 2008, and there was a workshop close to Pilsen. Actually, the group that I'm part of at the University of West Bohemia in Pilsen, we organized that workshop. So I went there and I talked to a colleague about this conjecture that I mentioned, and we were thinking about ways to like improve the current best estimate. So there was it was not known, and it's still not known whether four connected line graphs are Hamiltonian, but it was known that seven connected line graphs are. So we were discussing ways to lower that constant seven to like either six or ideally four. And there was we were discussing a possible approach. So I came to the workshop, and on the first night I fell ill and I had to stay in bed for the next day. And I think I actually left early. But while I was in bed, I couldn't do much. I had fever, and so all I could do was to think about this problem. Right, I couldn't move, and there was a crazy idea that I couldn't like even like fully formulate, but it seemed like a possible approach, and it turned out to be a possible approach. It took a couple of weeks to somehow clarify the ideas, and it seemed to work, and it didn't quite yield the improvement to four which we would have liked, but it was quite a significant step forward. Instead of four, we got five plus n plus a little assumption. So it's not, it's like halfway to the, it's like halfway to the conjecture, except the other half looks the more difficult one, right? But it was something. But it was a long way from getting the idea and then maybe getting to the form that I was certain that it works, to actually putting it in a form that's like expressible in a paper. It required us to introduce a lot of terminology and notation, and it was really it was a very difficult task, because this machinery that we needed to create for that was quite extensive, and it was actually more extensive than any of the like research projects that I dealt with before. So I think at least 3 years before the paper was published, and it was quite like much of the time we worked on this paper quite intensely. So there is a huge amount of work that went into that paper, and I really had the feeling sometimes that it's so complicated that I can't really choose between different possible ways to write it up. If I manage to write it up in any way, then that's the best I can hope for, because it's really I really found it difficult. Plus there were moments when you write things up, and including the little details, sometimes you find that actually there are gaps in the argument, right? And in this case, there were several such moments. There was a gap, and then you have to hope that you can fix it. But sometimes it looks like a serious gap, and it can take weeks to fix it, right? And that's what happened. And these are very difficult moments when you are dealing with a big project like this, because it's difficult not to, you know, not to get depressed by the thought that maybe like everything that you worked on for the past 2 years is wrong, right?
Yeah.
So that's also something I think that any mathematician has to learn. You need to be you need good nerves, because I think that's inevitable. You can only avoid such situations when you work on easy questions that you can be sure that you can just solve. But you don't want to do that when you're a mathematician, right? So inevitably you will be dealing with questions that may be too hard, and maybe you don't have any chance of solving them. You don't just know. And maybe it will also happen that you resolve the question, but then you find bugs in the argument, and then it's, so you have to endure. All in all, this was this is the special paper for me. It's called Hamilton Cycles in Five Connected Line Graphs. I can try to write the argument up, but it's actually not like completely in my hands, right? I had to rely on the hope that it can be done. So if you look into the, there is a short acknowledgement section in most papers, right? And people thank reviewers for their comments and so on. And so I somehow felt it necessary to mention the places where I was working on this paper, because I even felt that the influence of the places was somehow important. It actually is quite important. Depending on where you are, maybe you can concentrate, or it's hard to concentrate, and so on. So I put even the places in the acknowledgement, because I felt this was important.
Still on the topic of papers, though, we saw that you actually wrote two papers with our professor, actually, Dr. Vasilin Yunich.
Yeah. Yes, and I always liked working with Vasilin and visiting him at SFU. So of these two papers, I remember better the one on the mixed Ramsey number. So that was, I think, the third course is Dan Crow, and I'm not sure if there are more. So it's kind of a mixed problem in Ramsey theory, in the sense that it's not just the monochromatic copies of a structure that we are interested in, but in this case it's both monochromatic and what is called rainbow, which is the opposite of monochromatic, right? Mm-hmm. And somehow those two notions are mixed in this problem. And I had the feeling that, so there was some progress, which it was quite interesting. I had the feeling that maybe but we didn't come back to the problem for since then. So it's, but I still, in retrospect, I have the feeling that perhaps perhaps we could have pushed the method a bit further. But yes, as I say, I always enjoyed working with Vasilin, and also there was a, I'm very grateful to him for inviting me to take part in the hikes up the Grouse Grind Trail,
which, oh yeah,
the weekend, and it's something that I think that on every visit to Vancouver I climbed there at least once, and has been a remarkable thing. So I guess next time I come to Vancouver, I'm sure to go up there again.
I was gonna go, and then I didn't. I ended up not going.
I recommend that.
Yeah. Yes. I've been told to go many times. I just haven't done it yet.
Yeah, I do.
I've been up it a few times, but I always end up getting like to the top and just thinking, oh, oh, that was way too hard, never again. And then next year I'm back. How was it collaborating with other mathematicians other than our just like Dr. J? Any notable experiences?
So in general, I would say that this is a great thing about maths. Well, I guess like in all science, you collaborate with people, but in maths, it's really like you get to collaborate with a lot of people. If like, so there are researchers who prefer, who do most of the work by themselves, right? And they are the single authors of their papers and so on. But I think most do it the other way, and they tend to collaborate with other people, and you have many opportunities for that. And it's very interesting because everybody is different, right? So like working with different people is like never the same thing. And it's also one interesting thing about it is that you really have, especially if you work on difficult problems, you have to rely on the other people, right? Because you can't be sure to be able to solve it by yourself. Well, you can't be sure to be able to solve it with them either, but it can help. Like, and one interesting thing is that when you work in a group of people, I think it's quite often the solution to the difficult problem arises from, it's, you know, like maybe somebody just says something, it's meant to be a good idea, maybe it's not, maybe it's actually complete nonsense, but it starts some kind of thought process in somebody else's, you know, someone else's head, and it can lead to something, you know. This is a fascinating thing, I guess, that I think one sort of conclusion from, or like one sort of lesson from this is that when working with people, especially on maths, you should never be intimidated by the feeling that, well, I shouldn't say this because it might be wrong, or it might be, you know, it might be a silly thing to say. So there is nothing like that. And especially because even a silly thing can lead to something interesting, you know. So besides the fact that there are no silly questions you could ask, because the goal is to understand. So whatever gets you there is important. But also, like in this teamwork thing, it can be that even a silly idea or a silly question can lead to progress. So that's, I guess we could go on for another hour, right? And it actually is quite interesting for me to think about these things again and so on.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. It was a pleasure to meet. And so thank you for listening to this.
It was great getting to know about your work and about you.
And thank you again, Dr. Kaiser, for taking the time out of your busy schedule to speak with us on our Ramsey Theory podcast.
We truly appreciate the answers you shared with us today, and I'm sure they will be of the great use to the general public.
And thank you again to everyone for listening to our podcast today.
We hope you learn a bit more about Dr. Kaiser, a prominent 21st century mathematician.
I'm Stephen Ng. My main role for this project was coordinator. I set up communications between group members and divided tasks between everyone to ensure we met our deadlines for the project. I also proofread and revised our questions for the guests to ensure that they were relevant and engaging.
I'm Payal. For this project, I've sent emails to 4 of the theorists and communicated with them in order to arrange the interviews and selecting the preferable times. Researching and setting up questions for the interview was contributed by everybody, and the interview was conducted by all of us together.
My name is Newt Hardin. My task for this project was emailing and communicating with mathematicians to figure out which dates and times work for everyone to have interviews, as well as creating questions and researching more about mathematicians to create the best types of questions, as well as creating the final presentation.
My name is Harleen Kaur. I emailed 4 different professors and I got reply from one of the professor, and I got in touch with him and had to figure out the best time which suited him and us. Also, I did research on the mathematician and made a set of questions with my group members for the interview.
Broadcasting live from the traditional territories of the Tsleil-Waututh, Kukwetlam, Skahomish, and Musqueam nations, this has been Ramsey Theory, no strangers at this party. This podcast was made possible by the students of Simon Fraser University's Ramsey Theory course, led by Dr. Veselin Yungic, who is also the producer of this series, as well as funding from the Mathcatcher Outreach Program. My name is Aidan Wright, I'm the editor of this project. I currently study at the University of Victoria. The soundtrack to this program is titled Rising Ronald in Memory of Ronald Graham. It was written by Nina Jokic, another alumnus of the Simon Fraser University Ramsey Theory course. Tune in again soon for more of the latest in Ramsey Theory, and to hear more from mathematicians working at the edge of human knowledge. Thank you for listening.